Before we get into the podcast, I want to personally invite you to Nashville to join Todd Adkins and I for our new Pipeline Learning Community. This is not a conference. This is actually a small group of pastors and church leaders. We're going to be journeying together for 6 months over a course of several gatherings here in Nashville, eating great food, fleshing out a leadership pipeline, and helping you implement it, figuring out how to implement it in your context. So go to myleadershippipeline.com/learning community. Once again, that's myleadershippipeline.com/learning community to not only learn a philosophy and framework for leadership development, but also to implement it. Now enjoy the podcast.
You're listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. This is your host, Todd Adkins, and I'm here today with Daniel M.
Hello, hello.
And also a three-time guest. That doesn't happen very often. We've had a couple recently. I'm trying to think, who are they? Christine Kane.
Yep, she was two-timer.
No, she's three.
Oh, she's three now.
Yeah, okay. She made the three club. And I think there's only been one other guest. Maybe Craig Rochelle?
No, he's two.
He's two?
Yeah.
It was a recent one. I'm blanking on it. We just recorded it.
I feel so special.
No, it wasn't John Acuff either. He's been on twice.
Paul, you are special.
Indeed, indeed. Okay, so this is Paul Tripp. If you don't know who he is, living under a rock.
Yes.
If you're married or a parent, you probably pretend you don't know who he is, because when you read his content, you just want to crawl under a rock sometimes.
Which, by the way, Paul, my wife and I are reading through your marriage book right now. And every Sunday, as a part of our time that we spend together on our Sabbath, we read a marriage book or a parenting book. So we're going through yours chapter at a time. And every chapter, right before we start, we're like, I don't know if I want to read this.
I don't know if I want to do this.
And at the end of it, when we pray for each other based on the topic, we just feel so uplifted. So you're speaking into my marriage. Thank you.
Oh, that's
Paul.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, we did a marriage conference that was recorded probably a month or two ago. And that was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did that one. And I took a small group through the parenting book last year on Wednesday night. So it's been great. The biggest thing you should know Paul Tripp for, outside books and his own conferences, is that he was one of our main stage speakers at the first Pipeline event.
Yeah.
And he does all the discipleship content for Grid, on Ministry Grid, for that core competency of discipleship. So we're more than happy to have him back on today. Paul, is there anything that you've got coming up that you would want people to know about?
Well, something very interesting. Maybe 14 months ago, met with seven of the Philadelphia Eagles, who are just very sincere, committed believers, and they wanted to talk with me because they wanted to use their notoriety for Christ. So we began to plan a live stream event with them. Throughout the season, we prayed that God would give them success just to build that event. Well, that's actually going to happen. I guess the God answered prayer Super Bowl is sort of an answer. May 4th, I'm doing an event with them called the Faith Playbook. And then the day after, that's going to be shot as a video series. But it's going to be a lot of football, but mainly the gospel. And I'm going to be interviewing those guys. And it's going to be a really fun but very evangelistic discipleship kind of evening. It's going to be hosted by Scott Hansen, who's a committed believer as well. He's the host of NFL Red Zone. And then that will stay live for 90 days. Till September. So if anybody's interested in that, it's just Faith Playbook. Churches all over the world are going to be using it for an evangelistic event. We estimate by the time that goes dark, somewhere between 300 and 500,000 people will watch that thing. So it's very, very exciting. And just taking an opportunity of just the platform that God has given these guys to use that to spread the gospel.
Amen. That's awesome. I'm looking at it online. Faith, thefaithplaybook.com. You got to check it out.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get into our questions. The first one for you, Paul, is this one. What is a conflict or failure that has benefited you in leadership?
So early in ministry, this is really was a game changer for me. I was a young pastor, and I got this rather blistering 12-page letter from a woman in our congregation. And it was an angry letter. She sort of took me limb for limb. I was so hurt. I was just a young guy trying to do my best. And I called my brother Ted, and he was a pastor as well and sort of preceded me into ministry. And I wanted him to lick my wounds. And the first thing he said to me is, "Do you believe in the sovereignty of God?" I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, then there's probably a reason you got this letter." If he had been in the room with me, I would have punched him. that seemed just so insensitive to me. And he said, "I know this is hard, but read through that letter over and over again in the next 2 or 3 weeks and ask God to help you to see through the anger and ask God to point out some things that you really need to pay attention to." And that was hard to do, but as I read that letter, there were 2 or 3 things that just jumped off the page for me that just set my ministry on a different trajectory. And what I walked away from that is just the realization that God doesn't always promise me a perfect instrument that's going to speak to me, that I want to be a listener. Even detractors, even people who say things in hurtful ways, I want to be humble enough and open enough to say, could it be in this hurtful message that there's something for me to hear, something that I need to see? And just to live out the gospel that I don't need that person to like me. I don't need them to think I'm wonderful, because I don't get my identity from their acceptance or the respect. But it may be that God has placed that voice in my life in order to point out something that I need to pay attention to. And that just changed the way that I interact with those things. When on Twitter or something, I'm being trolled, I don't ever respond back defending myself. But I'm always willing to ask the question, is there something in this for me? Mm. And invariably, there'll be some shred of something that is just worth paying attention to. And again, I think if you know where your identity is, you're not afraid of looking at that stuff, and you're not afraid of listening, and you don't feel the need to defend yourself every time. I mean, in my sane moments, I know I'm a bit of a mess, and I know I got a ways to go, and I know I'm far from perfect, and I know I need to learn. And so I want to be that. I want to be able to listen, even if the messenger is speaking or writing in a way that's unkind.
So when someone responds to you, or when you're looking at that tweet or a comment from someone, you know, like that, do you just kind of reflect back and say, what can I learn from this? Or do you actually engage? And also with that story, with the lady who sent you the 12-page letter, how did it end?
Yeah, so let me give you a more current example. With her, I ended up thanking her for the letter and telling her that there's some things in her letter that God had really used in my heart. I didn't feel the need to respond to everything she said.
Okay.
But I did do that. One of the things that maybe 5 or 6 years ago, somebody was at an event and they wrote this blog post about some things in the event. Now, what they wrote was a horrible misjudgment of my motives, and the fact that they would do that without ever talking to me. I mean, I'm not John Calvin. I'm still alive. You can talk to me, you know. So I'm reachable. But they didn't do that. But what I, as I read over and over, I realized there are places where what I do needs some explanation, because there are things that could be misunderstood, and I've, that actually changed some of the things in the way that we would conduct those weekends, marriage and parenting weekends, dangerous calling weekends, whatever the weekend was. So again, I think that the way I was handled was sinful. I think it's wrong to just judge a person's motives in public. I don't think that's what the body of Christ should be doing. But it alerted me to some things that we could deal with that would clear up some of those misunderstandings.
Good deal. Good deal. So who or what in your life has been the greatest influence?
So this will sound a little bit idiosyncratic, like, okay, that's you, but how's that going to help anybody else? But I think it actually does. The minute I read that question, I thought of my brother Ted. Ted wrote Shepherding a Child's Heart, and he's now retired, was a long-term pastor and preceded me into ministry, as I said earlier. And it's hard for me to recount the many, many, many times when I encountered things, I didn't know what to do, I didn't know how to think, I needed somebody that I could talk to, that I could trust, not just trust their wisdom, but trust their integrity. And I think so much of what I've learned has come out of those conversations. Now, not every leader is going to have an older brother in leadership as well. But here's what I think is the ticket. I think everybody needs that guy. Every leader needs that older guy who's been in the battle, who understands the issue. You can talk to that guy in shorthand. He'll get it right away. Who is trustworthy, who won't carry private things to somebody else, who loves you, who will follow up with you to make sure you're doing okay. Everybody needs this. I think my ministry is a community project. I wasn't wired to do this by myself. And so it's been great to walk through that with somebody who knows me, knows ministry, has wisdom and integrity.
For all those who are listening, I mean, that makes total sense. And I can hear it in your words, and I guess the way that you were sharing that there's a lot there between you and your brother and how he has spoken into your life. And I'm sure the way that's kind of gone both ways. But for those who are listening and they're like, man, I want that, but I don't have anyone in my life like that. And I don't even know how to start or where to start. What kind of advice would you give them to move toward that?
So, well, I just a couple things. One is every pastor needs to be pastored. There's no indication in the New Testament that there's any leader who is safe living up above or outside of the body of Christ. To need to be led is is not just a condition of being a follower, it's a condition of humanity. So every leader needs to be led. And so I just think you've got to be super committed and disciplined to find that person. And if you're fairly public, people won't presume to lead you. You need to ask them. I was for many years on the staff at 10th Presbyterian Church. One of the pastors there, I preached the evening service, which was a feeder service. That's where young people would come into the church, and it was very exciting. But I wanted somebody who was watching me, asking me good questions, encouraging me. And I had to ask for it. I went to one of the pastors who had been there years and years and said, "Would you pastor me? I need your leadership in my life." And so find that person. Younger in ministry, I was brought in contact with a guy who was theologically as diverse from me as you can imagine, but that relationship was just a safe harbor for me. He was dealing with many of the things that I was dealing with, but you gotta seek that out, and you can't be willing to say, "There's nowhere that this is ever going to exist for me." My particular situation is unique because I had a brother in ministry. But again, I think if I hadn't pursued Ted and told him I wanted that kind of relationship with him, I don't think he would have pushed himself on me.
Yeah, that's good, because I think sometimes we want someone to, or maybe we think back to student ministry or when we were in college and we're like, well, we kind of, those who shaped us kind of, they were the authority over us or the pastor of the ministry. So as we get older, we kind of assume that that's how it has to work as well. But I appreciate you kind of sharing that, hey, you have to actually ask for it. You actually have to pursue it.
Let me say one other thing about this. I think successful leaders teach their leaders to lead them. A manager teaches his managers to manage him, because management is a community thing. And if you have one person who has no management influence over him or any leadership over him influence, he's going to be in trouble. So it's just something you have to say, "I've got to find this in my life. That's God's norm for me to be part of this, the care that every person needs."
I think that's really good. Having worked with, if I look back and I think about the best leaders that I've worked with, it is those that allowed me to lead them where, whatever they were asking me to do or oversee or be a specialist in, they always allowed me to lead them.
Yeah.
I think it's really insightful. I do have one question though, when it comes to influence and your brother, I'm curious as to who grew their mustache first, who had influence over the other there.
That's good.
Well, he's dramatically, tragically older than me.
Tragically?
Tragically. It's just, I mean, times I speak with him, I think he's going to rub his ear and it's just going to fall off. Or, he's that decrepit. So he probably had it first. But from the moment mine grew, he's swung from jealousy to depression and back and forth.
So, this is fantastic. Oh, man. Yeah. So other than your mustache, Paul, what would you want your leadership legacy to be?
he's a mustache and dapper. I got to say,
oh, yes.
Having been having been around you a couple different times now, I'm just like, man, this guy, he always is just
dapper,
dressed.
Dapper is the very right word.
Dapper. Effortless dapperness. All right, now we'll stop.
Do you know the name Sinclair Ferguson?
Yeah.
So Sinclair is a great theologian, and I have a tremendous respect for him. And I was speaking with him at it was Southeastern Southern Baptist Seminary, and on sanctification, and I just stood next to him, Sinclair. I just so appreciate your ministry and your impact on my thinking. And he turned to me in his Scottish brogue and said, "But I lack your sartorial splendor." Oh, he made no comments on my work.
I love that.
So legacy, when we get back to legacy,
this is something that has been a real point of practice and determination for me. I don't actually want to have a leadership legacy. I want my work to be my legacy. I don't want the legacy of Paul Tripp to be all this Paul Tripp stuff. And I really think we've got so much of that in our culture. If you're paying attention to my social media presence, which is pretty robust, it's never about me. Mm. I don't think people need to know where I bought my last pair of socks.
People would be interested.
Yeah, they may be. If I'm going to a conference, I don't say, "Hey, look who I'm going to be on the stage with this weekend." I'm not judging the motives of anybody who does that. I just know for me, that would be personally dangerous for my heart, and I don't want that to be why people follow me, why they like me. I really want it to be the only thing that I have that's worthwhile, and that's the gospel of Jesus Christ. Mm. I'm not a great guy. I'm not super wise. Everything I write is simple. I tried to write something eloquent once and it didn't work. So I want that message to be my legacy. And I've worked very hard to take myself out of the places where it can be about me. Again, I'm not saying that everybody should make my choices, but I do think we have too much of a leader-centric leadership culture. It's not just about good principles of leadership. It's not just about the content that the leader has produced. It's about the leader. And I don't think that's serving us well. And so there's my answer. I want that legacy, a legacy of practical, everyday, life-transforming material that people are thankful for. And I think it'd be great if people would say, we actually don't know much about Paul Tripp. Mm. I'm actually fine with that.
That's so fascinating. Yesterday I was with I was coaching a group of pastors, and one of them had a question on this, and they were like, how do I balance me planting and shepherding this church with me wanting to right in me wanting to share. And, you know, in a sense, not necessarily talking about platform, but in a sense, he was talking about platform and, mm-hmm. and his online presence. And I mean, I think that's, I mean, that is a struggle, and it is a ever present and ever pressing question upon pastors today, because social media is everywhere. So it was just so helpful to hear your perspective on it, because as I follow you on social media, your tweets and your posts, and I wasn't connected with you on Instagram, but when you were answering that question, I flipped through your feed, and you're right, I couldn't find a single picture of yourself. No selfies. I saw a picture of barbecue ducks. Must have been in Chinatown.
Oh.
Yes, that's right. That's interesting. Let me just comment on that. That's the fun part. That's the only sort of fun part of my social media presence. And it's all just stuff that interests me. Mm. I'm just not going to have all these snapshots of my life. First of all, I just think there's so much misunderstanding in that. So Luella and I may have a really tough week, but we pose for the selfie at the restaurant like we're the happiest couple that ever existed. And yeah, I just don't want to be, I don't want that to be the attraction of my work.
Yeah. But is there anything else that you do then, other than not posting about yourself? Is there any other way that you kind of interact with social media and guard your heart in that way?
Sure. I think that we have really worked, my team, to have our social media presence content driven. That if you're interested in me and finding stuff about me, you're going to be bored with my social media presence, and that's intentional. If you want practical everyday life material, then you will find my social media presence very helpful. And so for example, last year I had 24 million individual visits to my Facebook page. Now that tells me that there are hungry people out there. They don't give a rip about Paul Tripp. Because if they did, they wouldn't be coming to my Facebook page. So it's just in all those ways. If I'm at a conference, I probably won't do a formal book signing. Now, I would never embarrass somebody who comes to me with a book. If they come to me with a book, I'm going to sign my name and say thanks for the encouragement. I'm glad my work has been helpful to you. But I don't want to have somebody who wants to talk to me think that the only way they can talk to me is by buying one of my books. And again, I don't have any judgment of anybody else who does that a different way. If I've been super high profile and appears like this is going to be a massive picture-thon, I'll probably be out the door and in my car before the final song is done. Mm. Because I don't want an event that has been about the presence and promises and stunning wisdom of the Lord to end up being about me.
Yeah.
And the thing that the person's excited about is, oh, I got a picture with Paul Tripp. And the culture's crazy. I had a guy come to me at an event and said, can I take a picture of me holding you?
Wow.
You know, like a baby. And he says, I'm trying to see how many leaders I can find that will let me hold them.
I hope not
many. I didn't know whether I should blow off my head or his head at that moment.
That is,
I think, what's happened to us? This is why the guy's at the event. It's just like,
that's incredible.
Wow. Yeah, it's crazy.
All right. Let's go ahead and hit question four. Or we could just ask, what are the craziest things people have asked you to do?
Yeah. And will you let us hold you?
I don't want to hold you. I don't hug people.
Yes.
Little unholy. Oh, man.
Yes. It's so.
I'm one of those. Oh, I can't believe it.
Every time I tell that story, it feels creepier.
Oh, it's creepy.
It is creepy. All right. What habits or practices do you feel focus on so you can continue to learn as a leader?
So there are a group of things here. One is that I'm never going to think that I'm a graduate from anything. That I have to believe that I still need to learn, I still need to grow, that no matter how many books I've written, no matter how influential my ministry is, I'm a person in the middle of my own development. And so I want to read, I want to learn, I want to study. I want to go back to a passage that I've preached on 1,000 times and study it as if it's fresh again. So that learner's mentality, don't ever stop learning. Don't think you've arrived. Don't think you know all you need to know. Don't believe your press. Learn. Second thing is something my father was in many ways, a messed up man. But something he instilled in to all of his children is the dignity of work. He used to say work is its own reward. Because at the end of the day, you get the satisfaction of having worked. Use your hands. Use your brain. Use your gifts. And there's a result of that. So hard work. If you're in a place of leadership, you're often in a place where you don't get work assigned to you. You have to have that discipline inside of you. And I'm not a young guy anymore. I'm working as hard as I've ever worked. I do that with motivation, as excited about what I'm doing as I've ever been in my life. And one of the things that's cool for me right now is because I've been at this a while, I'm seeing the harvest of that work, which is a sweet thing. But I'm so thankful that when I get up in the morning, I don't dread work. Mm. And I because of physical things, I don't have all the strength I once had, but I work. And I'm very thankful for that. There's a third thing. And it's that I had someone who is one of those people that I had invited into my life to be a voice. And this friend is still in my life. He's my oldest friend in both senses of that word. Oldest in terms of age, oldest in terms of the length of our friendship, who watched me in the enthusiasm of ministry and leadership to just load my schedule to breaking point. And he sat down with me and said, I want to say something to you because I think you need to learn this. And then he said, no one is going to say no for you. You have to say it. And he said, it's not always spiritual to say yes. Not every opportunity is an opportunity for you. And you can be wrongly managed by opportunity, which will wreck your life because there's always many opportunities in front of you. You can begin to think that you're more essential than you actually are. And there's only one Messiah, and it's not me. And so that's been tremendously helpful to know that sometimes the most God-honoring thing I can say is no. And so those things together have really been, those are nail in my life. I'm always going to be a learner. Work is a beautiful thing. And people who work harvest the rewards of work. And then that just, if you're something less, something higher in responsibility than an hourly employee, nobody's going to say no for you. You better learn the places where you need to say no. You better learn what your unique contribution is and the limits of your schedule. Can I say something more about this?
Absolutely.
I don't like thinking of priorities as a list, because we don't live listologically. You just don't start at the top of your list every morning and work your way down. It's not the way we live. I think of my life, if you guys could imagine this, as three overlapping circles. The labor dimension of my life, the relational dimension of my life, and the spiritual dimension of my life. I know everything's spiritual, but that's the directly Godward part of my life. And outside of that triad of overlapping circles, there's nothing, because I don't have 8 days in a week. I only have seven 24-hour days. So if one of those circles expands, by necessity, it will expand into the other circles. That's the way it works. So if I say yes, 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 because I only have a limited amount of time in my life, something else is going to have to give way to all those yeses I'm saying. And that's where I think this assumed tension between ministry and family, or leadership and family, comes. It's interesting to me that there's no specific, clear, or detailed discussion in the New Testament that assumes the tension between ministry and family. Because we know that God would ask us to do one thing that would necessitate us disobeying him in another area. So it seems to me that tension is set up by the way that we think about and conduct ourselves in ministry. It's possible to have a very healthy ministry and a very healthy family that work in cooperation with one another, not pulling against one another.
So you said those three areas were relational, spiritual, and
labor.
So then how do you then differentiate between opportunities and discern between opportunities then? Because I'm sure there are a ton that continue to come your way.
So am I uniquely gifted for this opportunity? Is it within the sphere of the things I seem called to? Is it a group of people that I haven't had impact on before? Is it a partnership that will have a longer-term legacy? So I have a series of questions that I ask, and then I look at those circles, and I say, if I accept this, what will be the impact on other areas that I have to be committed to? Let me give an example. When I was approached about doing the discipleship part of the pipeline, I had to give that some consideration, because I knew that was going to be a major piece of work over a period of time. Now, I think that's right in my wheelhouse. That's the kind of stuff I ought to be doing. But I wanted to think about what's the impact of that on other things that God calls me to be committed to. So after I've asked the sort of more strategic questions, then I'm going to ask the question. So
love that.
the guy who manages my life and my schedule, he'll say, it looks like you got a room for this event in your calendar. And I'll say, yeah, it does. But if we stack up these things, there's going to be no time for Luella, my wife, is going to be without me for a while. And maybe it's best not for us to add one more thing. So I'm always thinking of those other dimensions. I'll give you another thing. I don't think it's healthy for me to be traveling so much. I'm never in church on Sunday. To allow that to expand so there's no time for me there, because I still need to sit and listen to somebody preach the gospel to me. I still need relationships with the body of Christ. I still need to experience the beauty of corporate worship. And so after answering the strategic questions, I'm going to then look at the impact on that. If this area continues to expand, what is it going to be the impact on other areas of my life?
Yeah. Thank you for answering that. That was incredibly helpful. Well, let's get to the last question of our time for the podcast, and that's this. What's the best piece of leadership advice that you've ever been given?
Well, this one was really hard for me because I've gotten so many good pieces of advice, but I think this story will help. So I was a young pastor. I had planted a church, and I was just feeling unsupported, beaten up, unsuccessful, and all I could think of was quitting. I was in Scranton, Pennsylvania, a place where the American Dream died in 1950. And old coal and railroad. And I had investigated a job in Southern California being a Christian school principal. And I thought, man, Jesus and surf, what could be better than that? So I went to my elders and said, I want to resign. I said, well, Paul, we don't want you to resign. I said, yeah, I just can't do this anymore. And so not really wanting to do that, but knowing that I was serious, there came a Sunday where they stood with me and I resigned. Congregation was shocked. Many of those people had never had a pastor other than me. And it was a very emotional morning, early afternoon after the service. I was the last one out of the building. As I was getting ready to lock the door, I turned around. There on the porch of the church building was the oldest man in the congregation. And he said, can I talk to you? I said, sure. He said, Paul, we know you're immature. I thought, well, this is a great start to the conversation. And then he said something that changed my life. And it's just not an exaggeration. He says, where's the church going to get mature leaders if immature leaders run?
Wow.
And I,
oh man,
he said, that's all I wanted to say to you. I walked home. I wept the block and a half home, and the word picture I gave Luella, when I walked in the door, she said, what's the matter? And I said, all I can say is God just nailed my shoes to the porch of that building. I can't leave. I called my elders that afternoon and said, okay, I'm an idiot. Can I unresign? They said, well, this is not really typical, but yeah, we'd love for you to do that. And I stayed for another 9 years. Had I not stayed, none of the books would have been written. None of the stuff that's happened since would have happened. Mm-hmm. Now, there's two things that come out of that for me. You're not in ministry or in leadership predominantly because you're able, but because your Lord is able. And of course you're going to grow. Of course people are going to find weaknesses and failures in you. Of course you're going to mess up. I mean, think of the rat bag of losers Jesus called for his disciples. I mean, none of those disciples would have ever qualified to be an intern in any ministry we respect. And so you've got to be willing to be weak and to fail and not run. Maturity is the product of staying and continuing. People who run every time they get exposed or they get discouraged miss all the lessons that are there, all the growth is possible just hanging in there. So that just I just determined I'm not going to run. I want to be on the other side of hardship, better off because of it. I don't want this constantly transient ministry life. It doesn't work, and it sure doesn't create leaders. It doesn't. It creates runners. The other thing that just has blown me away as I thought about this moment in my life over the years is the power of a single sentence from one man to change a life. I mean, literally, one sentence, and it changed the whole direction of my life. Well, I want to have good enough ears to hear more of those sentences.
Well,
because I don't think he's meant, I don't think he's meant to be the final voice in my life. And this unlikely man, this man was not my hero. He's not a guy who will ever be known. In many ways, he struggled with depression himself. Maybe that's why he got my discouragement. But he spoke to me, spoke with courage and love and honesty. And God rescued me. One sentence. And I don't know when the next one of those sentences is going to come that I desperately need to hear. So I don't want to be a runner.
That's so good and so, I think, important for us to hear. I mean, you know, if I look back at my ministry, I did spend at least the first, I don't know, 10 years going from place to place. Part of that may have been discouragement. Part of it may have been just better opportunities. But I can honestly say the places that I look back on and tell crazy stories of things, can you believe how bad this was or that was? That's where I learned the most. That's where I learned absolutely. The most. And that's where I learned the most about people and dealing with difficulty and really being a leader. And some of it was failing through that, and some of it was just dealing, you know, with the things that were there. So I think that is an excellent word.
Can I say one other thing about it? I think that what God enabled me to do is be emotionally open so that man was able to speak to me. What often happens when you make the decision, I'm done here, you close off your heart. And all the good things that people have to say to you and all the lessons you can learn, you don't learn. You say, that I don't want to be part of anymore. And you close yourself off. And for reasons I don't understand, just the goodness of God's spirit, I was willing to have that conversation. I mean, frankly, the last thing I want to do at that moment was talk to anybody. But I heard that voice, and it just, the impact on my life is incalculable.
And all of our lives as well, because of your faithfulness in that moment. So thanks, Paul, for your ministry, for investing into Ministry Grid with our discipleship competency, for investing into our lives through the interaction with Pipeline and in all that we do here. Dangerous Calling, Parenting, those are two books that have made a deep impact on my life. So if you haven't yet read either of those, be sure to do that. Also go to paultripp.com, thefaithplaybook.com as well. And Paul, just to close out, my wife and I do this marriage and parenting podcast, and we were talking about your book. And here's something fun I thought you'd want to hear. We have non-Christians who listen to our podcast as well. And one of our neighbors that we're praying for, because that she picked up your parenting book, which we were like,
whoa.
I know. I'm like, man, she's going to get the gospel preached at her. I was like, so we're praying for her that, Paul, through your ministry, that she can hear the gospel. So, man, thank you so much.
Oh, that's sweet. Thank you. Thank you. And keep rattling my cage. I love doing this with you guys.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Before you go, I wanted to invite you once again to be a part of our Pipeline Learning community. To learn more about the opportunity, go to myleadershippipeline.com/learningcommunity.